The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1111. It's Friday, the 6th of July, 2018. On the podcast today, I have David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. UJO is the ticker there, and David discusses the details behind the new comprehensive planning application submitted for the Restall development, which they have a 27.5% interest in. Also on the podcast, Ross Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Diversified Gas and Oil, that's DGOC, Cortex, QTX, and XPS Pensions, XPS ticker. Plus, market analyst for Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about companies releasing news next week. That is Ocado, OCDO, Micro Focus, MCRO, and ASOS, ASC. And as always, at the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. UJO is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for asking.
Now, you had some significant news regarding one of your investments, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, David, as always, for people listening right now who are maybe not familiar with Union Jack Oil or just brand new to the podcast, can you summarise the company for us, please?
Yes, of course, Justin, I'm delighted to. Union Jack is a smaller oil company. We're based on, located on AIM. The volume is very, very good in our shares, and we effectively invest in very, very late stage projects whereby we take interest in wells that are going to be drilled or wells that have been drilled and we can get for production. So that's our modus operandi, and we're looking to grow the company. And our first well was a very, very good discovery, the Restall 1, which basically has put us on the map. And once we get this into production, assuming all the planning goes through and everything, we'll be in a very, very nice position financially.
Excellent stuff. Well, David, the news was yesterday, new comprehensive planning application submitted for the Restall development. So just take us through the interest you have in Restall first. Give us a bit of background, if you could, David, before we go into this.
Yeah, well, Restall was drilled up in a little place called Restall, believe it or not, outside of Scunthorpe. And we found several zones of oil-bearing formations, and we tested, and it tested about 710 barrels a day equivalent, some oil, some gas, and we're looking to produce from the ash over grit. And we had an appeal against the planning permission, and we lost, JV lost, and there are certain reasons why we lost. And I believe that these reasons have been comprehensively sorted out by Egdon and the team.
Absolutely, yeah. And so this new planning application. So explain why it's saying it's new comprehensive planning. What's the difference here? What's, you know, I mean,
there are lots of differences. I think what people must understand, we're in a changing world. I sound like a preacher here, but I'm not trying to be. But what happened 5 years ago or 4 years ago cannot happen anymore. The name of the game is raised, and I think people would know what I mean by this. What was okay 4 or 5 years ago isn't okay anymore. And by using the word okay, I don't mean just about right. I mean it was good. Mm-hmm. Health and safety, every issue was covered. However, people want far more understanding and clarity on what goes on. And one of the issues was whether or not there was a capping layer of rock above an aquifer. And at the time, nobody could prove that there was a capping layer. So what happened? Boreholes drilled, some hydrology done, some testing, some rocks were looked at. And without doubt, we've proved empirically that there's a massive layer of rock, which is impervious, over an aquifer. So whatever happened in the highly, highly unlikely event of any issue, it just cannot happen. It cannot cause a problem to any rocks or aquifers below. So that was one of the reasons. The other reason was lack of a ground report, which wasn't needed in 2014, is now desired now. So Egdon have done a cracking job on that, I have to say. We've new Union Jack have been part of this piece of work, and we've seen it, we've shared, we've had an egg and have done a cracking job, I have to say. And the amount of work it takes to actually get this thing off the ground, if anyone would read of the notes on that RNS made yesterday, a number of reports go in are as long as your arm, and quite rightly so, and are all very, very good. There was an issue about the liner, which was it impervious or was it not? This time there's a new liner being put on top of the existing one, which is known to be impervious. It's like armour plate. It's an armadillo skin. So, again, this is all very, very good. This is an upgrade. And I think there's far more clarity and easier to understand, apart from a whole bunch of technical stuff, which you wouldn't expect everybody to understand, maybe. It's fair for people to read and basically understand. I think, you know, without being too overpraising, Egdon have done a great job on this.
Yeah, okay, cool. And as far as any comeback on this, feedback on this and report, when will that be concluded then, David?
Well, it takes about 3 months for everybody to get their comments in and people to evaluate and take a look. And, you know, obviously the councils don't take this lightly and neither do we. So everything has to be done properly. So it takes time. Mm-hmm. But the main line is it's in. We've got the ticket to the dance now. It's all in and we've got our ticket. So it's just a bit of time now. And we've waited long enough. So a few more months is not going to hurt. And hopefully we get a favourable outcome.
Yeah, and you're quite confident that, you know, everything, every query has been covered off comprehensively, is that all right?
Without anything is possible, but you'd have to be confident. Just being involved in all exploration or development, you've got to be confident. If you woke up with one speck of negativity, you wouldn't be doing this. You'd be in an office somewhere all the time, mm-hmm. if you see what I mean, Justin. You know, it's a high-risk game and obviously high rewards. And yeah. The board love it. We get huge delight. good times and bad times.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, listen, if someone's listening to this and are liking the sound of your confidence and where this is going, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Yes, of course, as always, I'll say there's always risk attached. We all know this. But the three reasons I would say is really the transparency of the board on our projects. It's number one. We also try and do what it says we do on the tin, although sometimes it doesn't always go the path you expect it to. We do try. And I think the most important thing for investors, we've several projects ongoing at the moment. And as always, we look at new projects. And I'm pretty confident the news flow would be pretty good over the next year or so. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking weeks, I'm talking about the next year. You know, we're constant with what we have under our belt. And also, we've got some production with Fiskerton Airfield. We've production at Kennington and a new partner, Humber Oil and Gas, our commercial partners who are backing us every part of the way.
Yeah. And it's probably worth mentioning, I know you're a big supporter of this, but Egdon there have set up a sort of community fund and the liaison group with the local community here to help out.
It will happen, I'm sure, and I fully support this, because you notice that the community, you can't just go and try, not that Egdon or the JV partners try and walk over, they don't, but I think a lot of work, one of the most important thing is to get people on your side to understand. Like, if I can bring in people, say, oh, these guys are coming up to frack. We're not fracking. We don't frack. Union Jack are not involved in that. Mm-hmm. So when we say we've got a conventional asset, it means conventional. So, and also the community fund, if the company is making money, then why not share some of it with the local community? Because some of these places need help. Some of the communities need help with all the cutbacks and everything else. And Graham Bull, my business partner, you know, we spent a hell of a lot of time around these areas up in the north, and there's some lots of places who would benefit and could benefit. You know, I can't speak at the moment, because I don't know who would benefit from the fund, but somebody will if it all happens, if it all goes through. But I think the point to make is, yeah, I think it's a really, really good idea to get people involved.
Absolutely, definitely. Of course it is. I mean, it's in the community, so, you know, those guys benefit, everyone benefits, you know, so...
We're in changing times, Justin.
Yeah,
absolutely. But the world has changed, not just the UK, but all around. Everywhere's different now. And what you did, like I said, what you did 5 years ago, you don't do now.
Yeah. And you know, it's changing for the good. Is it? I mean, you know what? It may take a lot more process, and we may need to change ourselves and look at it all. But you know, it's changing for the good. It's a positive environment, so everything's covered off.
Of course it is. Only strangely enough, companies like ours are more green than a lot of other companies. Mm. If you see what I mean, because A, we understand the world. And B, we need to be as well. You know, without going on a rant, you know, look at all this terrible plastic and all that in the sea and along. You know, I'd be driving home tonight to Devon, and all I see is a mountain of paper cups and wrappers and plastic along the side of a motorway. You know, it's terrible. When you look for it, you'll see, and you think, well, how can this be allowed? Mm-hmm. So that's my green speech of the day.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Listen, you can never be too good to the environment. David, thanks for coming on. And like I said, you've got a lot of things going on, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. It's summer and you're at, what are you, Summer Games? What are you, the Olympics?
Sport, I'm at my daughter's sports day live from the Withdean Stadium, Brighton, where Brighton Hove Albion used to play till they moved to their plush Amex Stadium just outside town. So it's the council-owned athletics track and it's rammed with Brighton Hove prep school for girls, hammering round being all sorts. My daughter's just done the shot put, and I think we're about to get the year three or year four by 100 relay, rather exciting. So I promise not to do my David Coleman impression.
You know, do please.
For those
do.
Of you remember David yeah, Coleman. Yeah. For those of you remember David Coleman, bless
you. Yes, I love David Coleman. And that's good there, but that's a big stadium, isn't it, for a sports day event?
It used to hold about 8,000 fans when all the temporary stands were up for the footy, yeah, but it's quite roomy now. So it's pretty full with kids and mums and dads, so it's going on for most of the day because it's quite a big school. So
yeah, I suppose it gives a sense of an event and a performance,
yeah,
and a bit of pressure.
Going, and there's an MC with a microphone who's bound to disturb us at some stage, but it's all very. I've got the javelin going on in front of me. I can see the shot put in the far side of the field, along with the long and triple jump, and I'm sat right at the edge of the athletics track.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, let's. I don't want to take you away from the excitement there, Russ, but...
I was going to say, I can't promise the stocks will be as exciting as the sport, yeah, but yeah. I thought this week I'd just do three updates on things that we've looked at before with varying degrees of success. Diversified gas and oil, Quartics, and what was Zaffinity and is now XPS Pensions.
I don't know if I told you this, Russ, but I mentioned it to a lot of people. When they first listed diversified gas and oil, and you know, most companies go with oil and gas that way round.
Of course,
but
yeah.
their ticker would have been dog, and they didn't want to be saddled with that.
Yeah, okay, you don't want that one. No, that's asking for trouble. So you've got to choose your name carefully,
yeah,
I get that.
DGOC, I find it really hard to remember that, but I remember dog first.
It doesn't come naturally anyway. DGOC on AIM. Yeah. We first looked at it actually March of last year, since when it's doubled, which is rather gratifying, as from 64 to about 128p. And then mid-June, the shares were suspended for a day or two. I thought, oh, hello, what's going on here? And it was because they were announcing an acquisition. And they've announced a $575 million acquisition of assets in the Appalachians in America from a firm called EQT. They've paid for it by drawing down on a new debt facility and a $250 million placement. And that was priced at 97p. And that's clearly gone down a storm because the shares have since bunged up to 126. And why the shares responded so well? Well, they're buying assets in three states, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia, if you're interested. But what's important is that they're basically doubling their production to 60,000 barrels of oil equivalent a day, increasing their acreage, increasing their reserves, and these are profitable and cash generative assets. So profits and cash flow are going to go up. Mirabeau have been crunching some numbers, they think, in the medium term. You're looking at a potential trebling of earnings for the group, and they're even talking about at some stage on the current share price a yield that could be in the 6-7% range at some stage. So again, if you're into your small cap oils, it's going to be the sort of thing that you're going to be interested in, because you've actually got one that's producing, chucking off cash, and is going to think about paying your dividends. you may actually want to go to the other extreme and buy something that isn't producing or hasn't even got anything yet for some real sex and violence and leverage. But I think, you know, for leverage into the oil crisis, is a company with a rising production profile that's going to excite oil and gas fans. And obviously, at the moment, the oil and gas price, well, nobody knows where it's going to go, let's face it, but it looks pretty well underpinned. Yes, OPEC is looking to increase production, but the Saudi increase looks like it's only going to offset Libyan and Venezuelan declines. And if Iran is excluded from the global markets by America, which might happen, then he's taking about 4% of global supply out. So obviously, if the oil price went down, that could take a bit of steam out of the stock. Short term, that doesn't look likely. And the individual company dynamics, if you're into this kind of thing, and I know lots of people aren't, but if you are, it's probably one of the better ones right now, I would suggest.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny thing is, that guy in the background doesn't have a microphone. He's very loud, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a powerful set of lungs on him, I tell you.
No.
A career on the stage clearly beckons.
Yeah, he's the right man for the job there, I know that.
Yeah.
Cool. Next up, what's next, Russ?
So Quartix, QTX on AIM. It's a Cambridge-based company. You know, it's not done as well as DGOC. We looked at it last May, actually, almost a year ago, and it was at £4. And it's just dribbled down to 367. And the chart, it's kind of marooned between 370 and 390. So I'll get your opinion on that in a minute. Remember, it's a GPS and telematics company. And it doesn't provide these services. Well, it does provide these services directly to the insurers. But it's stepping back from that and is looking more to do it directly to the fleet owners of the trucks. So there's a bit of a tricky transition going on. And I think that's just basically why the shares are going sideways as that transition goes on. There was a trading statement in March that was a bit wishy-washy. Insurance business tailing off a bit quicker than they thought. They now suggested in a first half trading statement that stabilised. We get the first half numbers on the 25th of July. Revenues in line, increase high single digit, which is fine. Profits broadly unchanged, which I think means down to flat year on year owing to international investment. And the international investment's paying off. UK subscription growth of 4% wasn't brilliant. France and the US moved up quite nicely. So the story's kind of happening. It's happening slowly. And you've got a stock on a forward PE of 30, which probably means you want it to happen quickly. So this one's probably slightly on trial at the moment. It does offer a 3% yield. The balance sheet's fine. So there's no duress. But although TrackMate isn't a direct comp, it is interesting to see that those shares didn't do that well after its results in July. So the transition's happening. It's just going slowly, and it's on a high multiple. So I think if you like the story, you're going to have to wait for the stock to sort of grow into its multiple and try and get earnings to reaccelerate. Otherwise, it feels like it's going to be sort of range-bound to me.
Yeah, it looks range-bound. I mean, you know, yeah. Like I say, it's had a big rise, isn't it, the last couple of years, and it's trying to work off that, you know, trying to break that range above £4. Yeah. You may suggest it may do it. But
equally, if it goes below 370, 360, we probably should pay attention on it from a technical perspective, I would suspect.
Yeah. It's not an exciting chart for the last year, at least. Anyway, so what's next, Russ?
So the last one, it used to be known as Zaffinity. It's now known as XPS Pensions. XPS. It's a small cap FTSE index company, 375 million cap. We looked at it last autumn. It's done okay. It's up about 10% since then, to about 185. Remember, this is a company that supports and administers direct defined benefit pension schemes. It checks that payments are being made. It does recording, the community reporting, the communications. And let's face it, after the problems we've had at BHS, Carillion, Tata Steel, this is an area where people need help. So I think it's a terrifically well-positioned business. They've then supplemented that position with the acquisition of Punter Southall in January in a £159 million deal that they funded with a placing at £1.70. That's an actuarial consultant, an investment consultant. So they're sort of adding expertise and rounding out their offering. That seems to be bedding down quite nicely. Full year results were a bit messy because of the acquisition. They came out last week. It only had sort of 2 months from Punter Southall in there. Revenues of £64 million. Pre-tax profits of £5 million against a loss, and a whacking increase in the dividend. So you've now got a stock on a forward PE of about 18, but with a near 4% dividend yield for a business that should be relatively immune to the economic cycle in a really fascinating area where people need lots and lots of help. So I think it's one of these long-term, really interesting stories. The acquisition's bedding down, and again, that's probably why the shares have not gone anywhere for a bit. Again, the range is sort of 170 to 190 on the chart, but I think this, to me, feels like a fundamentally well-positioned, well-run company still.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, Russ, I'll let you get back to it because you're in the 100 metres, aren't you?
Oh, good God. That'll take me about 53 seconds. I'll be well and truly last, I can assure you.
Marvellous. Russ, have a nice weekend. Speak next
week.
Have
a fantastic weekend. Look forward to it, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You all right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
Been out enjoying the summer?
Yeah, very good. Well, you know, trying to enjoy it without melting. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, do you know what though? I went through a period about a couple of days back saying, I miss the rain. But now today, it's a Friday, whatever, you know, the weekend comes and the sun there. It's good, it's nice, isn't it? It's nice to look forward to that, you know? Yeah. And I'm back into it. Good, I'm glad to know. But I think it would be nice if it just had a couple of hours of rain, if whoever's in charge of that, just overnight while we're in bed, because my grass is now looking just brown and it's looking very awful. And then sun throughout the day would be quite nice. But you can't complain, I suppose. It's, you know, it's not gonna, it's like these extreme weathers, you know? The beast from the east, now this heat wave, it's going to happen once every 5 years. So, you know, put up with it and enjoy it, you know, because it doesn't last for long. It won't be long until we go back to dreary grey and rain, and then we'll all be whinging about that. Cool. Okay. So looking at big stocks, the reporting. Who's up first, Connor?
We've got Ocado. It's their half-year figures on Tuesday. Obviously, Ocado have had a pretty huge year. I think building off of last November's sort of announcement of a deal with France's Group Casino, that was sort of the first international agreement that sort of produced really long-awaited. And then this year, they've sort of gone deal crazy, really. I think January, there's the deal with Canada's Sobeys. And at the start of May, you had a deal with Sweden's ICA Group. And then, obviously, the biggie towards the end of May was the deal with Kroger in the US, or Ocado's entry point to the US, with the big supermarket giant, Kroger, I think, sort of aiming to fend off Amazon by upping its sort of the tech side of things, using Ocado to do that with Ocado Smart Platform. Obviously, similar deals with all of those companies. But yeah, I think it was doing well up until May. You know, its stock price was gradually increasing. And then I think that Kroger deal effectively doubled the Ocado stock price in like the 3-4 weeks after the deal was announced. Mm-hmm. It's done, you know, fantastically well, sort of held on to those gains since then and improved on them a bit. In terms of its financial performance, I think first quarter figures were back in March. Revenue was up 11.7% to 363.4 million, which is, you know, good. However, it was down on the 13.1% rise seen for the same period the previous year. I think average orders as well, they were up 11.1% to 280,000 per week, which is very strong. However, I think there were issues that I think I think the average cost of each order had fallen slightly, things like that. So it wasn't perfect. I think investors are also waiting for signs of the financial benefits of these smart platform deals and how that is going to manifest itself. I think in terms of its sort of half-year figures on Tuesday, the investors are going to want to have seen a revenue pick up back in the second quarter. Obviously, 11.7% is still very strong, but they want to see it not fall too far from the levels it was seeing at this point last year. Like I said, any update on the international deals, obviously, ideally, a new international deal as well, though I think the Kroger one might sate investors for a while. I think also, I guess, any update on current trading as well, you know, it's been some World Cup season. That is the kind of thing that should substantially boost Ocado's performance. You know, people ordering crates of beer and that online. So I think any update on current trading and how the World Cup has boosted its performance will be welcome as well. In terms of what our clients are doing, I'd say up until the Kroger deal, there were still a fair amount of sellers around Ocado, despite, you know, the deals in other countries. But since that Kroger deal was announced, those sellers have gradually fallen away, and we've started to see more buyers come in, despite the stock being at like near all-time highs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's been going up and down recently, like a small cap stock, you know? It's been those kind of, you know, massive moves in the company, up and down a little bit. But, yeah, the massive gap up above £7 there. And that's 10 quid. Look, it's done 50%, you know, in the last couple of weeks. But it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. It's got to calm down now, surely, because, yeah, those movements are not a big cap movement. There's a, you know, that's the volatility of AIM, you know, really was sort of a roller coaster. Okay, what else is next, Connor?
We've got Micro Focus International, which I guess is having exactly the opposite kind of year to Ocado, really. It's had an awful year. I think by late March, it was at 3.5-year lows. It's improved a bit since then. The main sticking point being March update. I think it wiped away like 46% of Micro Focus's value in a single session, with it having been down like 55% at its worst during the session. The main sticking point was it revised its revenue guidance for the 12 months to the 31st of October lower. I think initially it was expecting a 2% to 4% drop in revenue. That's been upped to a 6% to 9% drop in revenue, which is, you know, that's more than double, basically, what the decline is expecting. The issue being its ongoing struggles to integrate Hewlett Packard Enterprise's software division, which it purchased, I think it was last September, for like £6.8 billion or something like that. Mm-hmm. In May, it sort of gave an update on that situation. It said that revenue for the 6 months to April 30th, it previously said that for that period, revenue would be down 9% to 12%. But it said that I think a licensing deal that it signed in the interim would push it to the better end of that decline, which obviously a 9% decline in revenue is not good at all. But, you know, given the alternative, I think that did help the stock out somewhat. And it's fallen a bit recently since then. I think it said that it'd be selling, I think, like SUSE or SUSE, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce it, which is one of its higher growth divisions, to Sweden's EQT, which I think is a private equity fund in Sweden, for $2.5 billion. That news wasn't greeted too happily by investors and sort of pulled it back from its sort of recent levels since then. I guess in terms of its half-year figures on Wednesday, the reaction really hinges on the size of that interim decline, you know, how close it is to the 9% or 12% end of the previous guidance, as well as any revisions to its 12-month forecast. If it can trim that and say even like 6 to 8% decline or something like that, that could give the stock a bit of a boost given just how poorly it's performed in 2018. I guess any mention of earnings as well and the impact on that will be welcome from investors as well.
Lovely stuff. Marvellous. And look at the chart. Yeah. Do you know, that's almost, if you look at it, you could flip that over for Ocado. They're almost opposites. One's going down, gapped down, and is recovering a bit, and then gapped up and is going up a little bit. So it's almost like the exact reverse of Ocado. Okay, anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally we've got ASOS. They're releasing like a 4-month update on Thursday. It's mm-hmm. been sort of a fairly topsy-turvy year for ASOS. I think by mid-March it was at all-time highs. You know, it finally pushed beyond £70, which was sort of the previous peak back in 2014, pushed all the way to like £77.50 or something like that by mid-March. But since then it sort of struggled quite a lot. I think post that peak, it sort of, understandably, there was only really one way it could go, and it sort of started to tumble. Then its half-year results in April weren't greeted particularly well. Like, the figures themselves were very strong. Group revenue was up 27% to $1.16 billion. There was a 22% rise in UK retail sales, a 31% rise in international sales. Pre-tax profit was up 10% to £29.9 million. The gross margin had jumped from 48.3% to 49.2%. All exactly the kinds of fantastic figures you'd expect from ASOS at this point. However, investors sort of took umbrage with its spending plans for this year and the next. I think it said it was going to be spending £230 to £250 million both this year and the next financial year as it invests in its like technology and warehouse infrastructure and things like that. Investors weren't happy with how high those costs were, and sort of that helped continue the stock's decline across April. I think by May it was at £57.83, which is a 5-month low, and you know, basically like £20 off of those all-time highs in mid-March. Since then, it recovered somewhat by the end of May, heading into June, and then mid-June there was the U.S. Supreme Court overturned a previous ruling saying that e-commerce firms, obviously including ASOS, which were previously avoiding sales tax on its products, now have to pay sales tax on their products, which I think Morgan Stanley said could wipe 5 percentage points off of its US gross profit margin, and I think maybe take 1% off of its earnings before interest and tax margins as well. Actually, I think in terms of the update on Thursday, investors are going to want some kind of update on that sort of US Supreme Court decision and how it's going to impact ASOS's performance in the US. I think I was reading that though only like 13% of its revenue came from the US, the difference in its gross profit margins in the US and UK were pretty huge. I think it was like 60% in the UK to the roughly 44% in 60% in the US to the roughly 44% in the UK. So any news on that will be welcome. I think obviously then in terms of, they're just going to want to see the same kind of double-digit growth. that it posted in the half year as well in terms of revenue. I guess the big question is, like, has it fallen far enough that investors will be willing to get in on that, like, £62-63 mark? Because that is still, you know, pretty expensive for what is still an AIM stock. And in terms of our clients, they are broadly buying ASOS. They tend to always roughly be broadly buying ASOS. But there have been a few sellers creeping in recently to suggest that it's not guaranteed that the stock will get a bounce on Thursday.
Yeah, cool. So is that down to the margin, you know, this better in the US, in the UK? Is that down because of more competition over here or what?
I'm not quite sure. I think part of it was because it wasn't paying the sales tax on it and stuff, so that's why it was a significant one. But then that does leave a fairly big gap. Even if you remove 5%, that's still like an 11% or so gap between the two. I'm not quite sure. Well, I think also, I guess, maybe its costs of running over there aren't quite as big because it's not as big an operation. In the US, because I think it's not, you know, it's in the US, but it's not anywhere near the size it is in the UK.
Maybe just charges American people more because they're stupid.
maybe that is the case as well.
Of course, that's a joke. They're not stupid. There's some very clever, some very clever people over there. Not the president, but okay, marvellous. Connor, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
It's always something to eat. Thank you very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Block Energy, BLOE, is the ticker there. At four, SDX Energy, SDX ticker. At three, UK Oil and Gas, UCOG. At two, Expediator, XPD. And number one, most followed company, I do have a little bit of stock here. It's Ananda Developments, and that's, of course, in the medical cannabis field. And I had on the podcast recently, Melissa Sturgis, co-founder of that. It's on the Next Exchange, which now you can follow companies on the Next Exchange on Vox Markets. Slowly and surely, all the companies being integrated and put on board here, but it takes a while. But hopefully, it will be soon, long before they're all on there. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs of the last 24 hours. They are at five, Hurricane Energy Operations Update. Or operational update. At four, Angus Energy, board changes. Bit of a surprise there. Jonathan Story Tidwell has left there. At three, Vesarion, notice of results. At two, Echo Energy, mobilization of well testing completion rig. And number one, most liked RNS, was from Vast Resources, Diamond Specialist joined board of subsidiary. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, though, if you haven't already, download our new free app. I say new, there's updates all the time, but go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app, that's APP, and just follow a company you have interest in or hold stock in. As you just do a search on the main page, there's a follow button next to it. Hit that follow button, and whenever that company releases any significant news, you will get it via notification to the front screen of your phone, and within seconds you can read and act upon it if you want. Buy, sell, stock, anything. I've done that before the price even moved. Amazingly fast. So it's voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.